everyone. Welcome to Talking Tech. I'm Stephen Jolly, and on the line is David Woodbridge, adaptive technology consultant with Vision Australia. How's it going up there on the New South Wales Central Coast, David?
Extremely well today.
Very good. So, we've got a range of things we're going to talk about today. The RIVO.
Yes, because I thought we'd have a few updates from last week to fill in people a little bit more about, and we commented on the RIVO last week, but you've actually been playing with one for the last week or so, so I'd be interesting to hear your thoughts on it now.
Yes, I have been playing with one a little bit. Firstly, I'll describe it again for those who are not aware. It's a little device, RIVO, R-I-V-O, Remote Interactive VoiceOver, is what I believe those letters represent. So it's for using or interacting with an eye device, and I think it works on other devices as well. It does work with the Android ones, yep. The device itself is about the size, it's got the length and width of a credit card, so it just sits in the palm of your hand. It's about the thickness of, I was trying to work this out this morning, you know those biscuits, those double biscuits with the cream or the jam in the middle? Well, it's the thickness of one of the faces of those, roughly, if you can picture that. And it's nearly as much fun. Now, what it has is a number of buttons, and I won't explain what all the buttons are, but they represent the various activities you want to do on one of these mobile devices. And it actually works very effectively. I can very quickly move from one icon on the home screen to another. I can open one up, I can close it, I can jump to the app switcher, I can control the media, probably quicker than what you do with the gestures, and we all get pretty quick with the gestures after a bit of practice, so it's a very interesting device.
Excellent. Now, the other thing that I did mention a couple of weeks ago, and somebody told me the answer for it, we were talking about the fact that whether the screen curtain for VoiceOver, which is the triple tap on your iOS device to turn your privacy mode on or off to blank the screen, does it save battery power? And the actual fact is, no, it doesn't. So it's purely for privacy, and you won't save any battery power by using it. So it's for privacy. It's actually not for saving your battery life.
So I've been kidding myself all that time. It hasn't been saving battery. Now, Apple have brought out an update to their Mac operating system.
Yes, now we talked about the fact that iOS 7.06 was updated last week to fix that security SSL bug. And the day after that was released, I actually found my update for Mavericks sitting there for me for 9.2, which, amongst other things, also fixed the SSL security bug. So both iOS and the Mac, and of course the Apple TV, are all secure now from that bug. But the other nice thing about the update was, particularly for VoiceOver users, the screen reader, they also updated, more compatibility and more stability with Mail, Safari, Finder. And my favorite thing, rather than chewing up all my bandwidth and data using FaceTime video, I can now make FaceTime audio calls only to other Macs or to my other iOS devices that my wife and my boys use as well. So it's a good update to get, but particularly for the SSL security fix now. And of course, you can also get updates for Lion and Mountain Lion, the previous operating systems. And for all Apple updates, you can always go to www.apple.com/support.
How do you go about activating this update on your machine?
You can do it two ways. You can either go to your Apple menu, pull it down and choose software update, or you can go to your App Store, which is on your dock normally on your Mac, and choose the update tab, and then look at the updates there waiting for you and just initiate the updates. It's very straightforward.
Apple put a lot of work into the accessibility of their products. It appears that they do, and they talk about that too.
In some ways, they had their quarterly return conference call on the financial statements, of course, that Apple does every quarter. And a representative from the National Center on Public Policy Research asked two questions, both in regards to sustainability and return on investment. The sustainability one was really in regards to all the money that Apple puts into things like their energy farm for solar power, their working conditions, their environmental stuff in to do with the iPhones and the Macs and so on, how recyclable they are. The second question he got a bit heated about, according to the people on the internet, was the fact that they were really pointing out that, you know, we want to maximize profit here, guys. And Tim Cook's answer to that was, well, when we design devices for the blind, we don't consider the bloody return on investment. So I think that's a very clear statement of Apple's position from a corporate point of view, since it was the CEO talking, that Apple really does care about the impact that their devices have on everyday people, not just the bottom line for making money and getting the best profit available.
Very interesting to hear and to have it said out there so much too.
Yes, that was a very clear statement. So on the little blog site that I've got in my little comment, I just went, good on you, Apple.
There are a couple of surveys that have been done recently that I'd like you to take us through.
Yes, now this one was tweeted by a person that I know on Twitter, and I won't go through the hyperlink now because it's a little bit confusing, but if you go to the website for the moment for the show notes for Talking Tech, and of course that's http://davidwoodbridge.blogspot.com. On there you can see the link for the screen magnification survey, and it's basically the North Carolina State University doing research on screen magnification on different devices and how people use them and how people find that, how people find how productive they are using screen magnification on different devices. So to have input in it, go to the link on the show notes website and give your feedback.
Mm. So that one's underway. Now there's also the WebAIM survey of screen reader users.
That's right. So the WebAIM, this is the fifth edition or the fifth survey that they've done. And I won't go through all the percentage points and everything else. And again, it's in the show notes for the link. But primarily, the main points that they would like to talk about or they outlined were JAWS for Windows is staying steady at about 50% of usage of all their participants that participated, which was about 1,465. NVDA and VoiceOver are increasing in their amount of people that are actually using them. Interestingly enough, 74% of people like the fact that we have free or low-cost screen readers that are available, i.e. NVDA and VoiceOver. There was a stat about Internet Explorer, which is very sad because it's still being used by about 58% of people. And funnily enough, everybody that I know, they use Safari, Firefox, Google Chrome, and it was really weird because Google Chrome was only put down at about 2.5%. So I thought that was a really low number.
Mm.
The other one that's probably not that startling for people is that the use of laptop devices is outdoing desktops now by a small margin of about 3%.
It's only a small number, and really, isn't it?
It is when you think about it. I mean, I think it was 81-something versus 78-something, and it's not that big. However, there was also another number that also said that lots of people now, of course, are using screen readers on mobile devices. And iOS has still got, you know, four times the usage or coverage of Android and Windows phone still. So iOS is still up there at the top of the heap at the moment. Of course, it's all getting better all the time. And one interesting one, and I didn't put the link on this, and I may talk about it next week. In the survey, most people said, I think it was about three quarters, said they don't mind websites detecting that you're using adaptive technology like a screen reader. And some people are saying, you know, this is a breach of privacy. It shouldn't make any difference whether I'm using a screen reader or not. Your website should be compliant to the web standards. So there's one side of the fence that says, yes, it's good because then I'll get a better experience out of the website. The other side of the fence, people are saying, well, no, it's an invasion of privacy and there shouldn't be any need for it in the first place.
Yes, you notice that with banks. I know one group of websites that do that sort of thing, and it can be helpful because you know they're sort of thinking about your accessibility needs.
That's right. And look, I might talk about the link next week. Mm. There's a guy on the internet that's got very strong opinions on the negative opinion about that, so we might have a chat about it next week.
Talk to us now about using screen readers on touchscreen mobile devices.
Yes, now this was actually quite interesting. This was actually put out by Media Access Australia, and they basically had 6 points covering basically touchscreens on mobile devices. So they covered the iPhone or iOS products, the Android products, and Windows tablets. And some of the points that they described were things like, remember that the gestures that you use for your adaptive technology would change. They're not the standard gestures that are used on the device. Keep in mind that when some apps change orientation, that the layout of the screen changes, which I thought was a very good, meaningful one, that one.
Do you mean when they move from portrait to landscape, that sort of thing?
Correct. That's right. So, for example, if you're in the mail application, for example, depending on whether you're in portrait or landscape, this is on the iPad, the orientation of the items on the screen changes.
Yep.
So you can actually lock that orientation on most devices anyway. So that's actually a pretty good thing to do. The other one that I forget about myself, because I have a range of devices now, when I go back and use my old iPhone 3GS, there's a good point about keep in mind that some older devices will have a lag. So when you're swiping around quickly, like on your brand new device, the older devices will take a while for the screen reader to catch up with what your gestures are doing. So I thought that was a good timely reminder on that one. Another good one is try and avoid accidental gestures. So some people tend to touch the screen when they're not doing gestures, and you end up in all sorts of bother. And one coming off that is, if you learn where the back button is, or I guess on the iPad or the iPhone and the iPod Touch where the home button is, if you accidentally go into a function or you accidentally go into an application you want to get out, then find out where the back button is or a similar command is to get back to the initial home screen.
I find that a very good thing to know.
Starting point. It is. It is very good. And that's my favourite one. I always say to people, when you get lost, go back to a known starting point. And the final point was, all these devices now work with keyboards. So Bluetooth keyboards will work with iOS, Android and Windows. And there's no reason not to use a keyboard, particularly if you want to do lots and lots of typing. But the navigating is also very nice using a keyboard with these devices now.
And that's really good to know, is that the keyboard is still around and it's got life. They're being supported, the keyboards on these devices.
Absolutely.
Mm. Mm. David Woodbridge is Adaptive Technology Consultant with Vision Australia. This has been Talking Tech, and we'll have more Talking Tech next week. I'm Stephen Jolly.